Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Crown Pride takes the lead around the far turn. It is Crown Pride battling with Messier. They're stride for stride. Epicenter and Zozo's in behind them. Cyberknife sweeps up on the outside. Sandon gets the rail run, and they're into the stretch. It is Messier, Crown Pride, then Epicenter is coming up on the outside. Epicenter has taken the lead as they arrive into the final furlong. Sandon is coming after him. Epicenter and Sandon, these two, stride for stride. Simplification down the outside is next. They're coming down to the wire. Epicenter, Sandon, Rich Strike is coming up on the inside. Oh, my goodness. The longest shot has won the Kentucky Derby. Rich Strike has done it in a stunning, unbelievable upset.
That was the 2022 Kentucky Derby. Horse racing, exciting. It's fun. Dick Girardi, national horse racing reporter, columnist for the Philadelphia Daily News for, what, 30-something years? 22, 32 years? 38 years of experience, doing the math. Thoroughbred racing handicapper. He's won every award in horse racing journalism. Dick Girardi has joined us over the years right in front of the Kentucky Derby, and you got a Kentucky Derby coming up. And Dick is joining us now. How are you? What's going on, Dick?
I'm great, John. It was funny playing that Derby from 2 years ago. I was actually standing on the turf course, I don't know, about 10 yards from Rich Strike. And when he came running by me, I said, who in the hell is number 21? It was so bizarre. And Larry Comas, to his everlasting credit, picked him up right at the end and called him. But, man, that was crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I have to think, you know, I've been to a Belmont. I've been to a couple of Kentucky Derbies. And I told my wife, I said, we got to take the kids. We have to go to this event. It's just really special. You don't really need to be all in on horse racing to appreciate it. But what is the mood when an 80-1 shot wins the Derby? What's that do to the crowd?
Shock, like silence, like what just happened. I was actually in a contest that day where nobody moved because literally nobody had that horse. And Steve Asmussen, who trained Epicenter, who's won more races than anybody in North American history, 10,500, he's 0-25 in the Derby, and Epicenter looked like he has to win the race. So he just had this stunned look. So basically everybody around the track was like, who is that horse? And if you remember, John, he didn't even get in a race until the day before. When there was a horse that scratched right before the deadline, all of a sudden they said, all right, Rich Strike, you're on the also eligibles, you're in. And everybody just said, well, who was Rich Strike? Nobody paid attention to him. And the next thing you know, he's in a winner's circle. It's crazy.
Dick Girardi with us. He's joining us courtesy of betonline.ag. And I was looking at their Triple Crown odds, 10-1 for a Triple Crown winner. Do you think there's a Triple Crown winner in the field?
I don't, but I will say this. Fierceness has enough talent, similar to some of the horses in the past coming into the Derby. John, the issue I would have is it is trainer Todd Pletcher, who's one of the best to ever do it. He's had two Derby winners, and neither one of them ran a step when they came back in the Preakness 2 weeks later. He just doesn't run horses back in 2 weeks, so that would be a concern for me. And if it's some like crazy long shot, the odds on them winning three races are minimal. So, yeah, I would say against at this stage. I just don't see a horse, say, like Justify or American Pharoah, that even prior to the Derby said, you know what, this horse might be good enough to win all three.
I want to talk a little bit about the three favorites. Fierceness going off at about a 2-1, an 11-4 odds. Sierra Leone and Forever Young. In that trio, you know, how different are those three horses?
Yeah, very different styles. Fierceness is going to be either in front as they hit the first turn or really close to it. And if he's not, you can probably eliminate him because he needs to see Sky in front of him. He doesn't need to get behind half a dozen horses. Sierra Leone's going to be dead last early or close to it. And Forever Young, the Japanese-bred horse, he's probably going to be somewhere in the middle of the pack, would be my guess. So, yeah, there are three horses, all of whom have major talent. Forever Young is undefeated. Sierra Leone is a nose from being undefeated. And fierceness when he runs his good races, and he's run three of them. He's run faster than any horse in a race has ever run before.
Give us an idea. You know, there's been a lot of scrutiny on horse racing in the last few years and some of the deaths at the track, and certainly trainers have come under question. And, you know, is the sport doing different things now, Dick, to try to get it back to where it was and protect the horses?
Very much so. John, you remember there was a huge cluster in Southern California at Santa Anita in the winter of 2019. And that really is what changed everything in the sport. And give California credit, they were out in front of it. And their numbers, injuries, and deaths are down dramatically. There was a meet they had. I can't remember if it was at Santa Anita or Del Mar, one of their major meets where they didn't have a single fatality. So the numbers, the percentage of horses, it's gone down. The problem was last year in 2023, there was a cluster at Churchill Downs at Derby time, and then there was another cluster at Saratoga, and these are obviously two of the big meets, so that drew a lot of attention. But if you look at the overall numbers in the last, say, 5 to 10 years, because of how tracks are maintained, the way the vets are looking at horses pre-race, some of the diagnostic tools that they have, the number of injuries and fatalities are actually pretty dramatically down.
Was it a bigger issue that there were some bad actors who were introducing, performance-enhancing drugs, or was it just trainers pushing horses beyond what their bodies could handle, or some combination of that?
I think a combination, John. I don't think it's ever been proven that there's one particular thing. I think at Santa Anita back in 2019, they had an inordinate amount of rain for Southern California. So the Santa Anita, which is usually a pristine track, it just wasn't the same track. It was difficult to maintain. So that certainly was a factor then. Nobody's ever been able to correlate, like, all right, which trainers are having more injuries, and are they the guys who were perceived to be or actually have been found to be bad actors? I just think a lot of it is just, if you look at a horse, you know, you've been at a racetrack, you're talking a 1,000-pound animal that's running on legs that are thinner than ours. That's why they're so fast, but unfortunately, it's also why they're so fragile. But, yeah, you just given the diagnostic tools they have now, there's so much, the pre-race testing is so much better. And you wish every horse in every race could get the same diagnostic look that they'll get at the Derby. They don't. It's not feasible at every track because it is expensive. But I think we're heading in the right direction. But look, love to get to zero. I don't know. I don't think that's going to happen, unfortunately.
We're talking to Dick Girardi, longtime horse racing journalist, Philadelphia Daily News. You won an award for a series you did on Barbaro in 06. And, you know, this was obviously a horse who shattered its leg in the Preakness, ended its career. Can you take us through that time in your reporting and, you know, kind of how important that was to you to tell that story?
So it was a local Philadelphia story. The horse was owned by Roy and Gretchen Jackson. Roy was a graduate of the University of Pennsylvania, and he and Gretchen lived on their farm southwest of Philadelphia. And he ran what I consider, in my time covering the Triple Crown, the best Kentucky Derby I've ever seen. It was just awesome. So you're thinking, hey, this horse is going to win the Triple Crown. He was undefeated, goes on to Pimlico. And if you remember, and it feels, I feel fairly confident that the vet who actually operated, did the surgery on Barbaro, is also fairly confident. He got stepped on from behind right at the beginning of the Preakness. And he thinks that's what happened. So it was a total accident. But the bones in his right rear leg were just shattered. And it's the kind of injury, I remember the next day, they took him to the New Bolton Center, which is right near where the Jacksons lived, the famous equine hospital associated with the University of Pennsylvania. And Dr. Richardson was the doctor, and somebody asked him the next day, he said, look, how have you dealt with this kind of an injury before? He said, well, I never have. And he said, well, what do you mean? He says, those horses don't get to me. They don't make it off the racetrack. Mm-hmm. The injury was that catastrophic. But because it was the Derby winner and because the Jacksons had the wherewithal to take a chance, they performed this surgery, and the surgery was a success. The problem, John, was that these horses, now that they're, you know, they have one limb that's damaged, they're subject to getting this thing called laminitis, which is a terrible hoof disease where they all of a sudden start putting more pressure on different limbs. And Barbaro got it that summer. Then they were heading in the right direction again, and then he got it in all three limbs in the following January of 2007. And they had said all along, look, he's basically like, it's your animal that you have at home. When they're in pain, you're not going to keep them alive. So that was when the decision was made at that point to euthanize the horse. They just weren't able to save him, unfortunately.
You obviously care about animals. You've covered all of these Triple Crown races. I think since 87, you've been at every Triple Crown race since 1987, every Breeders' Cup since 86. You know, in a lot of sports, we're seeing records set and horses are going faster. What do you see at the track in horse racing? And of course, this is a sport that, you know, it has a bloodline and, you know, and is probably always searching for, you know, some angle or some degree of freshness. But are we seeing horses run faster than ever, or what do you see?
It's a really interesting question, John, and a good one. So to put this into the proper context, there aren't a lot of track records being set these days. But keep in mind, that has a lot to do with how the racetrack surfaces are maintained. Mm. Like when Secretariat set the world record in the Belmont 224 flat for a mile and a half, it's never been approached since then. This is to take nothing away from Secretariat, but he was doing it on a track surface that was yielding all kinds of fast times. So the times by themselves don't mean a lot. You have to put them in the context of what kind of a racetrack they're running on. So I would say this to you. There are people that believe horses are running faster than ever that do what's known as speed figures that suggest that some of the times they're faster once you equate them with the actual speed of the racetrack. I don't necessarily believe that, and there's no way to quantify it to be certain. But yeah, it's not like the normal human endeavor where almost all of Michael Phelps's records are gone now, right, which is kind of hard to believe. But in horse racing, there's still a lot of track records that have stood for years and years.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Derby, you know, in Secretariat in 1973. Sub-2-minute finish, yep. Best record, best run ever. You know, I'm fascinated by this, you know, and you know the sport, you know the trainers, the jockeys, and, you know, the breeders who think they have a good bloodline. But, you know, when you see a Triple Crown horse, are you seeing great athlete who just has an instinct also to run and likes to compete? And, you know, because I don't know, like, in, you know, you might get a 7'1" center who just isn't a competitor, who doesn't love basketball. You know, what do you see when you see champions in the Triple Crown races?
Yeah, probably the best horse to look at for that, if you can go back on YouTube, watch the 1978 Triple Crown with Affirmed. Remember the great Affirmed Ali Dar battles where the same two horses ran 1-2 in all three races. Affirmed clearly wanted to win the race. You can see it. So, yes, there are competitors like that. There's other horses that are herd animals. They just like to run with the other horses. They don't really care if they pass them or don't pass them. They just like to hang out. It's like they're in a field running with their friends. But, yeah, the very best of them have some competitive instinct. Now, what that is, you know, whether that's an actual thought or not, I don't know. But, yeah, Affirmed is the best modern example of that. And remember, he was the lone Triple Crown winner from 1978 all the way to 2015 when American Pharoah ended the 37-year jinx there.
I love this. I love this kind of conversation. Let's talk jockeys. With this Derby coming up, do you have a jockey or two that you say can win on maybe not the best horse?
Unlikely. As I said to you, John, I think before, it's called horse racing for a reason. No jockey can make a slow horse run fast. But if you have an experienced Derby winning, big race winning jockey on a good horse, I think that gives you a little more confidence. So if you like fierceness, you have to love that John Velasquez is riding him. He's won Derbies. He's won every big race there is. His mounts have won more money than any jockey in the history of the sport. So he's been around for a long time and is still riding at the peak of his powers. To me, the best jockey in this race is Flavien Prat, who will ride the 4 Catching Freedom, listed about 7-1 at BetOnline at the moment. Probably be about that price, I would think, on Saturday, right as the race goes off. But he has a tendency, you're asking the question, can a jockey help a horse move up? Man, he does it all the time, just by his tactics, by his daring, by when to know when to make a move, when not, when to go, when to wait. So, yeah, from that standpoint, I would like Flavien Prat on the four, catching freedom, and John Velasquez on the 17th fierceness.
I think I was at the Kentucky Derby when Calvin Burrell won with Mind That Bird at 50-1. And, you know, he got a lot of credit in the end, saying, you know, people said, look at the strategy he had in the race. But I got to think that it was just Mind That Bird's day.
It was his day, and Calvin Burrell had a nickname. It was named Calvin Bo-Rail. Whatever horse he was on, John, it didn't matter what starting spot he was in, he just took a left turn and headed right for the rail.
And did.
If you look back, he won three derbies in 4 years. And all three of them were with horses he just put right on the rail and never left. So, yeah, it was. And I think on Mind That Bird's day, he had figured out that, and that was a wet track, that the dirt down there had been more compacted. So it'd be like, let's say you're running on asphalt versus sand. Well, equal ability, the guy on the asphalt's going to win every time. Well, he found the asphalt, and the other ones were running on sand.
Dick Girardi with us. He's here courtesy of betonline.ag. All right, is there a long shot? We saw one 2 years ago. Obviously, Mind That Bird was like 50-1. Do you like a long shot or a horse that maybe nobody's talking about?
Yeah, Honor Marie, the 7, is 20-1 at BetOnline. That's the horse I like the most as a long shot. Now, I don't necessarily like him to win, but maybe to be second, third, or fourth. An interesting prop bet at BetOnline, John, you'll love this one. It's basically an even money bet over under on the winning margin, a length and a half. Well, I like Fierceness, and he's won his three races by a combined 30 lengths. So when he wins big. So I'm going to take the over. It's an even money bet, a length and a half. And the cool thing about that bet is, even if Fierceness doesn't win, any other horse that wins by more than a length and a half, you also win the bet. So over a length and a half at BetOnline is a cool prop bet for me.
Dick Girardi, I appreciate you. Have fun at the track. For people who have never been to a derby, give me something that isn't the race itself that you think like you would advise people to go see. Maybe it's the lead up to the race or the morning before or some of the training sessions or just taking a walk around. What do you recommend?
Right. If you're at Churchill Downs and you're there early in the week, if you can find a way to get out to the track early in the morning just to watch the scene of all the horses out there, and the Derby horses usually have and Oaks horses have a session around 7:30, that is so cool because you're not going to deal with the crowds that you're dealing with on Friday and Saturday. And if you're in town, I mean, there's the Louisville Slugger Museum downtown, the Muhammad Ali Museum downtown, which I've been to many times. And for people that don't know, the greatest grew up in Louisville. In fact, I've even visited his house. It's over on the West End. And I did in 2017, it was the year after Ali passed away that previous summer. I actually did a story for the paper where I followed his funeral procession. That's how big of an Ali fan I was. I did it like 9 months later. A lot of stuff to do in Louisville in addition to going to the track.
You know what I did when I was there? I went to the Waverly Hills Sanatorium. It was said to be haunted. And I don't know if you've ever done that tour. They do it at night. It'll scare the pants off you, Dick.
I love it. And Ali is buried in Cave Hill Cemetery, which is on the east end of town. And you can go to his gravesite. It's, you know, again, Ali was my guy growing up.
Yeah.
I don't know who you got.
I have
exactly one sports autograph, and it was before I got into the business. I got it from him when he was training at Deer Lake before the Foreman fight, and I hold it precious to this day.
I love it. Dick Girardi, thank you, man. I appreciate you.
You got it. Thanks, Jeff.
There he is, the horse racing guy from the Philadelphia Daily News. Steven. Are you into horse racing? Do you watch the Triple Crown events? Do you get into the Derby? You know, fastest 2 minutes in sports, and it's been said that a horse is the only thing that can carry thousands of people as people root for horses and especially root on these Triple Crown races.
Yeah, I mean, if I got nothing going on and I remember that it's on, I will definitely tune into like the main race. You know, I don't care about the other races, but I don't know much about horse racing at all. I like to listen to the people that do because they are like true gamblers and like true
yes,
true degenerates, and I love it. Like I love all the information that they have for this type of niche sport. So, no, if I'm around a TV at that time, I'll watch it.
I remember going, I went to see when Smarty Jones ran in the Belmont and was running for the Triple Crown. I went that day. I've never seen that many people in one place. Crowd of about 135,000 at Belmont Park that day. And Smarty Jones did not win, got passed down the stretch, lost the Triple Crown. It was just an amazing scene to see the crowd and the track and the expectations and the disappointment when he didn't win. Everybody, you know, it was 130,000 disappointed people who had come to see a Triple Crown. And then being at a couple of Kentucky Derbies, it's just the scene. Like, a mint julep is a disgusting beverage. It just is. It's not a good beverage. But it's the scene of the hats and the mix in the crowd of the people who are more there to party, and then the other people who are there to be seen and dressing up, and then you can walk down to the paddock and you can watch the horses come out, and it's just amazing to go, you know, to watch these animals. And Girardi hit on it. Like, I've always wondered, like, you know, you breed a horse, it's got a great bloodline, you know, maybe it's got a Derby or a Triple Crown winner somewhere in its bloodline, or maybe two, and you expect you're going to get a horse that's really going to run and be a competitor, and I just kind of look at people and I go, hey, we're all wired different. Some people are super competitive. Like, you know, does it matter? Does it matter who else was on the farm when that horse was born? Does it matter, you know, how they were trained growing up? Like, is it nature or nurture when it comes to a horse? And so you see these animals that are just magnificent. And then, of course, in the last 5 or 6 years, like, you know, you look at trainers and you look at Bob Baffert and you look at the allegations about, you know, drugs and, you know, his suspension, and you go, gosh, the money has ruined this sport. The money has infused itself into this sport in a way that is not healthy. And it was better when you had ranchers who were raising horses, breeding horses, who had a trainer who was local, and then you didn't have like these groups that were consortiums that were coming together and buying 20 horses and then trying to figure out, do they have like two Derby entrants inside there? And there was a horse in Southern Oregon that ran in the Derby years ago. Brother Derek was its name. And it was on a small farm in Eagle Point, Oregon, in Southern Oregon, right down by Medford. And I took a flight down to Southern Oregon and went to the ranch because, you know, it was entered in the Derby, and visited with the breeders and the trainers. And I thought, this is how horse racing should be done. It literally was right out of like Yellowstone. I expected like Kevin Costner's character would live on that ranch. And so it's a cool event, festive event. I hope the Kentucky Derby and the Oaks that happens the day before and, you know, the whole weekend is not overshadowed by drug allegations and, you know, horses being euthanized. Like, those are the things that have turned a lot of people off. And I'm hoping this sport gets its act together. Otherwise, it's going to go the way of cycling or, you know, East German powerlifters, because it just can't be that. I think anytime you infuse money, you're going to get people wanting to cheat, and you're going to get people who don't care about the animals. And that's where it kind of starts to fall apart for me. But I told Anna, I was watching some horse racing last weekend. I was watching this documentary on horse racing, and New York Times did this piece on sort of, you know, everything had gone wrong at the tracks. And I was watching it and I was going, gosh, you know, I'd love to take the kids to the Kentucky Derby sometime and just let them see it. And he's so right about the 7:30 in the morning training sessions. There's like a breakfast diner that's on the back stretch at Kentucky Derby. If you go there for breakfast, you can literally watch the horses run and train. The trainers are out there. They're timing them. The jockeys are out there getting comfortable with the horses. It's just it's quite a scene in the days in the lead up to the Kentucky Derby. Punch and Audio is coming up. Leave it here.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.